rushed back to grab the extinguisher here, but by the time he got back up the hill, there wasn't anything left. I swing my legs over the side of the bed with a heavy exhale. I click on the light and brace my elbows on my knees, looking down at the floor. I feel Caroline press against my back, her hands rubbing my arms in silent support. Fuck, I don't want to tell her. I'll rebuild it, no doubt about that, but it won't be the same. I know that, even without telling her and confirming it. You see anyone else out there? Maverick's silence tells me all I need to know. Who? Calm down, brother. You getting pissed isn't gonna help shit. I'll be there in 5. Knowing in my gut that he didn't tell me who it was for a reason, that reason pressing herself against my back, I shake my head and look down at my feet. What is it, honey? Caroline's question breaks through the silence, worry in her tone. Fuck, I hiss, knowing this is gonna put a dark cloud over our wedding day. I need you to trust me, darling. I don't know much, but there was a fire, and I need to go meet Mav and find out the rest. I'll tell you everything when I get back, but stay put while I go get answers. You're scaring me, she whispers, her voice shaken. Was anyone hurt? I turn and reach for her, pulling her into my lap. No, Lenny, I don't think so. Trey, Mav's uncle, found it and did his best to put it out. I don't want to scare you, darling, but I need you to stay here and let me handle this. Until I know more, I don't want you leaving the house. She nods, but I can tell she isn't happy about me leaving her with no answers. I'll be quick, and I'll keep my phone on me. Is there more? Is everything okay? Everything will be okay. Her eyes search mine for a beat before she nods and pulls a choppy breath in. Be careful, she whispers. Always. I climb from the bed and start getting dressed. The whole time, her eyes follow me. I see her wrap the comforter tighter around her body, and I hate knowing she's worried. She isn't stupid, my girl. She's likely connecting the dots just like I did when Maverick mentioned a fire. We haven't had a single break in finding the person who set her bookstore on fire twice. But judging by what Mav didn't say, I have a feeling that's about to change. The question is, will finding those answers do more than give Caroline the closure of knowing the truth? I know she's no longer the scared and shy woman I first fell in love with, but this situation is worthy of a little fear. I just pray that the fear guides her to rise through the aches. I'll be back, I promise. She nods. I'll be ready. She'll be ready. Fuck me, this girl. She means it, too. I can see her building herself up, steeling herself for whatever news comes back with me, ready to take it on. She isn't building walls, not like she used to. She's building her emotional army. Even with the shit I'm about to go handle, I can't help but feel pride witnessing just how far my shy and timid Caroline has come. I honestly believe she could take on the world. My Lenny, she's always been so much stronger than she gave herself credit for. But just as our love saved me, it helped her see that. I have no doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah, you will be. I love you, honey. I bend over the bed and kiss her soft and quick. I love you, too.
26. Caroline. The House That Built Me by Miranda Lambert. A fire. Clayton said, was, past tense. There had been a fire, not that there still was one. That's something I've been holding on to since he left 10 minutes ago. I locked the front door behind him and watched through the living room window as he rushed across the grass and into the detached garage that holds the golf carts and quad bikes. A few minutes later, he's tearing through the night on the back of one of the quads. I expected to see some sign of the fire close, but seeing the direction he's headed makes no sense. The land between our house and Maverick and Leighton's holds nothing. Unless the fire was at his brother's. God, I hate not knowing. Being afraid for the family that already owns my heart. There's no way I'll be able to go back to sleep. It was just a little past midnight, I think, by the time we finally fell asleep earlier. I lost track of how long we spent loving each other, but the last time I saw the time, It was close enough to midnight that I'm fairly sure that's when we passed out. Glancing at the clock above the oven, I wince. 15 minutes till 2. No wonder it feels like I just fell asleep. I literally did. Needing to keep my mind occupied, I start the coffee maker and then go to the fridge to pull some breakfast food out. We haven't eaten since the dinner at Maverick and Leighton's after the ceremony, but even then we didn't eat much. Even if we hadn't been anxious to be alone, we couldn't keep our hands and mouths off each other long enough to eat anyway. I don't think either of us finished half of our food before we were making our excuses and rushing home. Not knowing how long he's going to be, I decide to start putting together a quiche. Nothing crazy, but at least it'll keep me busy. If it weren't the middle of the night, I would call one of the girls to talk me through my worry. I take my time cutting the onions and bell peppers, the mindless task not taking my mind off my worries at all. "This isn't working," I mumble, dumping the diced bits into the bowl. I grab the pie crust I had already prepped and start to add all the ingredients, my eyes moving to the clock every 5 minutes or so. I blow out a breath, pick up a handful of peppers and onions, and scatter them on the bottom of the pie tin, covering the crust completely. As satisfied as I can be with my mind in such a jumbled state, I pick up the egg, cheese, and spice mixture and pour that into the crust. Picking up the quiche, I turn from the island and start to walk to the double ovens. 2 steps in, and the deafening sound of glass shattering breaks the silence. I scream, my whole body jolting in fear. The pie tin hits the floor, the sticky yellow contents splattering my bare legs and the area all around me. I glance down, confused, seeing the mess before another sound by the back door reminds me what startled me enough to drop the quiche in the first place. "Hello, Caroline." The heinous heat in those 2 words slams into me, and without looking, I know this is going to be bad. I just hope and pray that whatever happens here, Clayton won't be harmed. "Look at me, you stupid bitch!" I fill my lungs with a deep breath and say a silent prayer. Then I look up from my egg-soaked mess and into the evil glare of Clayton's ex, Jess. Jess, who was pointing a gun in my direction, with wild hair and even wilder eyes. "This is it, Caroline. Time to fight for the beauty you've found. No more letting fear win. Not now. Not when it isn't just your life that's in jeopardy here." "Clayton's going to be back soon," I tell her, proud of the calm I don't actually feel in my voice. She tosses her head back and laughs sinisterly. The gun jerks in her hold while she takes obvious enjoyment out of her crazy thoughts. "Oh, no, he won't. I made sure he'd be busy for a while." "What did you do, Jess?" My worry for Clayton barrels into me, but I push it aside. For now, I focus on where I am in the kitchen and weigh my options, while hoping to keep her distracted with questions. If I can just move a little to the left, I can reach the knife block. "What did I do? You've got to be kidding me." "No," I shake my head. "I'm not kidding you." "You've got some nerve, whore. You show up, move in on my man, and even though I was nice enough to give you a few warnings, you still didn't listen. Not even when I finished what I didn't accomplish the first time." "You set those fires?" I take a step back slowly when she looks away briefly. "God, you're dense. Of course I did. I would have taken care of you with the first one, but he assured me you weren't worth it. He said you wouldn't stick around. He said I wouldn't have to worry about you and my man." She wipes her mouth as spit falls down her chin. "He said all you'd need was a little warning and you'd be too scared to leave the house. Why didn't you listen?" Good heavens. She's insane. "Who, Jess? Who said that to you?" I take another step back, my heart thundering in my chest when I almost slip on the sticky mess at my feet. She moves away from the broken back door, kicking the rock she must have thrown through the window out of her way. As the barrel of her handgun gets closer, I feel panic rising in my throat. "John, you dumbass. He seemed to think you wouldn't be a threat. One fire, he said, would be enough to make the timid little turtle go back into her shell. I thought he was right. You didn't come sniffing back around my man for a while. But then you had to go and fuck it all up, didn't you? Should have trusted my gut the first time I saw you with Clay at that piece of shit bar. Should have slit your throat when you left that motel like I wanted to. I shake my head, blown away by what she's saying. The motel? The first time I saw you with my man. I left it be because you stayed away, and I gave you some time to make sure you wouldn't go sniffing back around what is mine. I knew Clay would get bored of your used goods. I knew he'd come back to me. But then you had to go and move your trash into my house with my man. That's when I knew you needed more of a reason to run far away from Pine Oak and Clay. John didn't want to help me again, but he did when I reminded him who was in charge. No matter what we did, you didn't take a hint. You were supposed to leave. You and John? Y'all were the ones messing up things with the rebuild of my store? It takes everything in me to keep my voice calm as the panic starts to flow quicker. I just need to keep her talking, keep her mind distracted. One more step. My hand slowly moves behind my back, and I wait until I have an opening, finally being close enough to grab a knife, but not wanting to get shot when she realizes what I'm up to. There's no way I'm going to give up without fighting to keep the beautiful life I have. I've got too much to live for. He didn't want me to, but I had to finish what I started. Saw right through his stalling and realized he wasn't really on my team, stupid motherfucker. You know, I'd hoped it wouldn't come to this. Now I'm going to be cleaning up your blood in my kitchen. You dirty everything up. I should just light this place up so Clay and I can move on without your filth. Her chest heaves and her eyes narrow as her face gets bright red. You just couldn't leave, though, could you? Even with your stupid fucking store gone, you still didn't go. No one wants you. You're nothing but a paid whore now, mooching off my man and living off his dime. There isn't anything for you here. You're wrong, I whisper, wincing when the unhinged madness in her eyes amps up. In my inability to keep from defending what Clayton and I have, I might as well be throwing out a challenge to this madwoman. I'm wrong? I'm wrong? You did not just say that. There isn't shit for you here. All you are, and all you'll ever be, is a warm hole. How did you get Clayton out of the house? I hedge, knowing I need to steer her into something a little safer than my relationship with Clayton, so I can get out of this kitchen alive. She grins, evil and wicked, clearly proud of herself. That dumbass ex of yours. She laughs, the sound nothing short of vile. You know, all he wanted to do was apologize. Stupid bastard. I finally realized what he was doing when he tried to stop me tonight. The whole time he's been trying to stop me. I just didn't realize it until today. Slipped up, he did. Told me you had a diamond on your finger. My diamond. And that he was fucking happy for you. Fool. Found out not long after that Clay married your dumbass tonight. John couldn't hide it any longer. He was just blowing smoke up my ass, protecting you the whole fucking time by keeping me from doing what I wanted to do all along. Always had a reason why we shouldn't hurt you. Well, joke's on him, since he damn sure can't protect you with a bullet through his brain. My God, I gasp, not dwelling on the thought of John being dead, but recognizing just how far past sane this woman is. There will be time later, when I make it through this, to reflect on everything she said tonight, and I will make it through this. I made sure to leave Clay that stupid fuck as a present. Left him right next to the ashes of that ugly gazebo I hear you married my man under. My heart clenches. Clayton worked so hard building that in our spot. He's not going to forgive you for this, Jess. You might think hurting me is the answer, but he'll hate you more than he already does if you go through with this. He loves me! The gun jumps as she waves it in my direction, spit flying from her mouth as she growls. You don't know anything! I know everything! Clay loves me. He always has. He was coming back to me. He hates you. The second you killed his baby, You made it so he wouldn't ever feel anything more than hate when he thought about you. When he finds out what you've done, he'll do more than just hate you. He'll forget about you. Because that's what my husband does when someone wrongs him and doesn't deserve his forgiveness. Shut up! She screams, shaking her head and banging her free hand against the side of it. Taking advantage of the insanity inside her bubbling over, distracting her enough that she lowers the gun just enough so it isn't pointed at my head anymore, and her eyes are no longer wildly hunting me as though I were prey, I lift my hand and grab the first knife handle I reach, pulling it from the block behind my back. All he had to do was give me that diamond, and I wouldn't have had to take care of the problem. The problem? I gasp. He didn't even want a fucking little snot-nosed brat. He said he never wanted them, but I knew he'd marry me if I was carrying his child. Then I could take care of it, and we'd still have each other. My hand tightens on the knife, my anger for the wrongs she's done to Clayton taking on a whole new life. You bitch! He would have loved that baby. Even with you being stuck in his life because of the child y'all shared, he would have loved it. You're right. He definitely didn't want to have a baby with you, but he would have been the best damn father. Who knows? Maybe he would have come around, but you'll never know because you killed his child. I see it in her eyes the second she decides to pull the trigger. That insane glint that's been dancing there since she broke in, turning into something feral. I move on autopilot, jumping to the side and diving behind the island. Before I fall to the floor, though, my arm flies out and over my head as I release the knife. I don't even know if I threw it toward her, but it was the only thing I could think of. Fighting a gun with a knife leaves little room for options. My thigh burns and I cry out when I land hard. My ears ring, the blast from her gun so loud that I feel its power in my bones. My body slides and slips against the eggy mess on the floor as I back toward the hallway. I had expected her to be on me the second I moved, but when I hit the hallway and press my back against the wall, all I hear is silence. Well, muffled silence. Between the gun going off and my thundering heartbeat, I can't hear much over the bounding tempo of my racing heart and my gasping breaths. Think, Caroline. You can't just sit here and wait for her to come back for you. Fight! The gun safe. Clayton showed it to me a few weeks ago, gave me the code, but I didn't think anything of it. I listen for movement, but still don't hear much of anything. However, when I go to stand, I realize why my leg is burning, and it has nothing to do with landing on it wrong. There is a small puddle of redness forming under my leg. Now that I've noticed, the bullet wound's pain becomes all but unbearable. Linny, fight. Fight, baby. Gritting my teeth, I do the only thing I can and rally. I wipe my hands on my shirt before placing them behind me and turning from the wall. Unable to put weight on my leg, I start scooting back with my good leg, pushing my body down the hall toward Clayton's office. The red trail against the hardwood floors is unpreventable, even if it's basically an arrow telling Jess how to find me. Once I reach the office, it takes me a little while to remember the code, but finally the metal door pops and swings open. I take in the different guns inside, but not knowing anything about them, I just grab one and pray it's loaded. I start moving back toward the door, but pause to look down at the gun I'm holding, remembering the safety that Clayton had mentioned. He hadn't been teaching me how to use the gun, merely mentioning how, if I needed it, I would have to click the safety off. Where the fuck are you, bitch? Oh, God, I pant, blinding white fear slamming into me. Where the heck is it? I turn the gun around in my hand, finally seeing the small button. After making sure it's off, I try to move behind his desk, but the fire in my leg makes it hard to breathe without it throbbing. I'm going to find you and gut you from your nasty used cunt all the way to your chest so I can rip out your heart and stuff it down your throat. I raise the gun, leaning my back on Clayton's desk and try to calm my racing heart. I hear her moving, swearing as she does. I look down at my still bleeding leg. Shit. Using the desk, I pull myself up from the floor and hobble as best I can to the attached bath, cracking the door and placing the tip of the gun between the gap in the direction of the office doorway. I hear her as she moves down the hall, her words incoherent as she rants and slurs. My vision is getting gray around the edges, and I know time is not on my side. "Gotcha, bitch!" Jess yells, jumping into the office doorway and searching the room wildly. "The fuck did you go?" My hands don't even tremble as I adjust my hold on the gun and wait. She takes 3 steps into the room, stopping right next to where I'm hiding, and with one last slow exhale, my vision now a dull black, I pull the trigger.
27. Clayton. Sometimes I Cry by Chris Stapleton. Pulling up to the still-smoking remains of the gazebo, I park next to Mav's four-wheeler and cut the engine on mine. I expected Sheriff Holden to be here, but not the 3 other patrol trucks pointing their headlights toward the ash and amber-filled space that I'd married Caroline in hours before. What I also hadn't expected was the body of John Lewis to be here. What the fuck? Shit, Clay, Mav answers, blowing out his breath. I know you thought it might have been him, but fucking hell. I don't look away, my eyes struggling to make sense of what's before me. John Lewis, the man who deserves whatever hell is waiting on him, lying half-burned on my property. What did he do? Start the damn fire and fall in? I ask no one in particular. Not sure, son, Holden says, coming to stand next to me. Your brother tells me that there's a connection here. I nod, looking away and at the older man. He's my wife's ex. There's not one good thing about what he shared with her either, not to mention his history of erratic behavior from a few years ago. He clicks his teeth, looking back down at the body. That's right, I remember that. Such a shame, those horses of yours. I hadn't seen him after that until a month or two ago when I was picking up Caroline in Wire Creek. Didn't say a word to us, but saw him there watching and not hiding it one bit. Has he contacted your wife? Shit, I hiss, looking away from the dead man. Earlier today, I don't know everything that was said, but she mentioned him approaching her briefly. Shit just got busy with the wedding, and I haven't talked to her about it since. Tucker says he saw them outside the grocery earlier yesterday. I glance in the direction he's pointing to see the young police officer. He dips his chin, but doesn't say anything. With all due respect, Sheriff, I hope you can understand how it slipped my mind, seeing that aside from us saying I do, there wasn't much time to talk about our day. I didn't mean anything by it, Clay. Just pointing out that this clearly wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing, if not even 24 hours after approaching your wife, he's here. What the hell was burning something down in the middle of my property gonna prove anyway? It doesn't make a lick of sense. I understand your wife's store in Wire Creek had some fire issues as well recently. I scoff. You could say that. Someone tried to burn her inside of there the first time. She'd got tampered with while she was in the rebuilding stage, and the second she put the place on the market, they came back and sparked it up real good. That wasn't long before when she officially moved into the ranch. Holden bobs his head, listening to me while one of the younger cops writes some notes down. Coroner's here, someone mumbles. I glance up at Spencer Russell, the town's coroner, as he climbs down from his truck. The man's old as dirt, but wise as hell. He walks toward our huddle and shakes hands with Holden and Mav before getting to me. Nice night for a barbecue? He cryptically jokes, grunting out a belly laugh while walking toward John's body. Mav snickers under his breath, and I see the sheriff shake his head, a small grin on his lips. I keep my silence. It's not like John being behind all this isn't believable, but Caroline's words about how he wouldn't have hidden behind the fires echo through my mind. That's why I'm having a hard time believing this is clear-cut. Someone like John Lewis would have made his point in an irrefutable kind of way. He would have been in your face and proud, hungry to see the fear he had produced. What he wouldn't have done was spent months hiding behind fires and petty construction site mischief. Well, well, Spencer mutters, using his gloved hands to turn John's head. Y'all see a gun anywhere around here? Ice-cold dread fills my veins. No, sir. We checked the area real good when we got here, too. Lenny, I wheeze, already running and turning back to the four-wheeler. I toss my leg over the seat and reach for the key. Before I can fire it up, the unmistakable sound of a gunshot echoes through the night. Caroline. Clay, I hear bellowed at the same time my engine kicks over. Before I can get the four-wheeler into gear, my brother is jumping on the back rack with his legs hanging over one side. I don't spare him a glance, flipping my wrist and gunning it back to the ranch, knowing he'll hold on, but not giving a shit if he falls off. I need to get back to my wife. Kill it back behind the barn, Mav yells into my ear. I nod, changing gears and picking up speed. When we come to the clearing that the house is in, I flip the lights off and drive to the back of the barn and turn off the four-wheeler, running toward the house not even a second later. I don't look to see if my brother is following. The only thing I care about is making sure Caroline's okay. My feet have just cleared the top step of the porch when I hear the second gunshot and all rational thoughts vanish. I lift my boot and kick the front door, the wood splintering as the lock gives. Shouldering the broken door out of the way, I stand in the doorway, my eyes searching and my heart praying. Clay? Mav whispers, pointing to the red smear that looks like someone dragged a body down the hall. Caroline! I scream, rushing forward and following the trail, Mav hot on my heels. I hear more footsteps rushing up the porch, and I have no doubt that Sheriff Holton didn't waste a second following me. No, I pant, coming into my office and seeing a nightmare coming to life. My world stops spinning a second later when I see through the cracked door of the office bathroom the delicate hand lying limp, the hand adorned with the rings I had put there. Holy hell, someone says behind me. I jump over the very dead woman on the floor in the middle of my office, noticing that not only is her head missing, she's got a knife sticking out of her chest directly under her collarbone. My girl fought. Lenny, love, I sob, pushing the door open enough to get into the bathroom. God, darling. My knees slam into the floor, and I reach out to check her pulse, feeling instant relief blast through the dark pit of dread that had settled over me when I find one, though it's weak. Get an ambulance here now, I bellow out. Stay with me, baby. You stay with me, Lenny. I rock her in my arms and pray, plead, and beg. My throat burns and my eyes sting. I bury my face in her neck. Breathe her in. Her limp body is heavy in my arms, her face drained of color. Ambulance is 5 out, Mav says, his own voice betraying his calm outer appearance. He grabs a towel off the rack and presses it against her leg. She's gonna be okay, Clay. Believe it. Ain't room for any other outcome. I shake my head, my tears falling faster. I don't say a word, not while my brother helps to stop the blood flowing from her leg, pulling my shirt she's wearing down to cover her underwear. When the paramedics burst through the door and take her from my arms, though, I break. I break into so many pieces that I know if something happens to her, I'll never put them back together again. The stretcher makes her look even tinier than normal. The men work on her for only a second before rushing down the hall. I jump from the floor and sprint after them. Mav grabs my arm, stopping me from getting to the ambulance. I turn and punch him in the face when the ambulance door shuts, one of the men yelling out that they're on the way to the hospital in Lawbone and taking off without me, taking my everything away from me. Get in the fucking truck, Mav demands, spitting and wiping his split lip with the back of his hand. He stomps toward my truck, not looking to see if I'm following. We both climb in and he punches the gas while I hunch forward to push my hands through my hair. Silence and the sound of the engine speeding through the night ring in my ears, the vision of Caroline lying in a pool of blood, lifeless, etched in my brain. She's gonna be okay, Clay. I'm nothing without her, I mumble, feeling the pain of my words like a knife to the heart. Stay strong. She needs you fighting, too. If she doesn't... Mab slams his palm against the wheel and bellows a string of curses. Shut the fuck up. You got another 10 minutes before we get to the hospital, and I fucking swear you better fix your shit by then. You're doing her no good already placing her in the ground when she fought to make sure you never got to know what it's like not to have her. You fight knowing she's doing the same. I blow my air out and lean against the seat, closing my eyes and doing my best to bat the fear back. The vision of Caroline as I saw her last makes it hard, But finally, we pull up to the emergency room entrance, and I'm out and rushing into the brightly lit waiting room. Caroline Davis, my wife. She was brought in by ambulance. The young nurse nods before typing something into the computer in front of her. She's here, but I don't have any news right now. If you have a seat, someone will be out as soon as they can tell you more. I need to be with her, I tell her frantically. She gives me a sad smile and shakes her head. I'm sorry, sir. It's hospital policy. Come on, Mav says, taking my shoulder and turning me to walk over to one of the empty seats. And we wait. We wait, and I pretend my world isn't ending.
28. Caroline. Wake Up Loving You by Old Dominion. The heavy weight against my hand is the first thing I notice. The warmth from that weight, the second. With the cobwebs in my mind, though, it's hard to register much of anything else. Slowly, the rest of my body starts to connect back with my groggy mind. The weight on my hand forgotten when the burning sensation in my leg comes into focus. I groan and try to open my eyes.
Lenny,
I hear whispered, but the only thing I can focus on is the pain in my leg, which is getting more and more intense with each passing second.
Darling, please calm down.
Hurts, I moan, my voice gravelly and thick like I just woke up.
God, baby. Carrie, stop fighting. You're safe. Calm down before you hurt yourself more.
At Luke's words, my body stops moving. I hadn't even realized I had been thrashing against the bed. My eyes are still not opening, but more around me registers now. I hear sniffles, some farther from me than others, and some right next to me. I hear the beeping of machines and soft, pleading whispers at my side. Clayton. Knowing he needs me just as much as I need to see him is what helps me to push the cobwebs away and take control of my mind and body. It takes a couple minutes, but I finally pry my eyes open. I blink frantically as my pupils adjust to the dim light. Luke is standing at the end of my bed, his sister in his arms while she cries against his chest. I turn my head when I see movement to see Maverick in much the same position with Leighton, standing under the TV mounted in the corner. Next to them, Tate is standing behind Quinn, his arms around her shoulders as she wipes her eyes. Then, when I look away from them, my handsome husband fills my vision. His hair is wild, like he's done nothing but run his hands through it. The stubble that had been on his jaw when we went to bed is even darker now, and his red, swollen eyes look like they're glowing as he openly and silently cries. Tears spill over his lashes and fall down his face before landing against our joined hands resting next to my side. He doesn't look away, doesn't dry his tears. He just stares at me, breathing heavily, like he can't believe I'm right in front of him.
Hey,
I whisper. His eyes shutter closed, and he sucks in a jerky breath before dropping his forehead against my belly. He shakes his head as his strong shoulders hitch as he loses whatever control he'd been holding tightly to.
Clayton,
I plead, my heart breaking over seeing my strong husband falling to bits in front of me.
Please, honey.
He mumbles something against me, the words muffled. I look around the room, frantic to get help in easing his pain, but I see not one dry eye as they witness the strongest man we all know unable to keep himself together any longer.
Clayton?
I wobble out, my chin quivering and my eyes filling with tears.
You're breaking my heart.
My chest literally feels like someone is pulling my heart from my body with each second that passes. His body shudders, and I hear him suck in a breath.
I thought I lost you,
he admits, lifting his head and looking down at our hands.
I saw you there, blood everywhere, and knew if I lost you, I'd be losing myself, too.
I'm okay, I gasp, needing him to stop. I'm here.
There's nothing for me on this earth without you by my side,
he continues.
She almost took you from me.
I choke on a loud cry as it bursts from my throat,
I gasp for air, but I can't stop wailing. Through my tears, I see Clayton jump to his feet, and then his hands push under my shoulders as he pulls my upper body off the hospital bed and into his arms. I wrap my arms around him the best I can with the IV and cling to him, soaking his shirt while he drenches my gown, the early morning events coming to a head as we hold each other.
I'm so sorry,
he mumbles against my neck after we both calm. For what? I question, opening my eyes. The first person I focus on is Maverick. His jaw clenches and his eyes are just as wet as I imagine mine are.
I should have done better at protecting you.
I gasp, pull back, and stare up into his tortured eyes. This is not your fault. No one, not even you, could have seen this coming. You did protect me, honey. All I heard in my mind was your voice reminded me to fight. Your strength filled me up without you even being there. I remembered you telling me where you keep your firearms, and that gave me a chance. You might not have been there, but it was you, nonetheless, who protected and saved me.
It's because of me you were in this situation to begin with, Caroline.
I frown. No, it was because of your crazy ex. Don't you dare take this on, Clayton Davis.
Lenny,
he breathes. Don't you Lenny me. We're both victims here, and she does not get to win. Not now, not ever. I see my words take root, the despair in his eyes lifting. His forehead comes to mine, and he rocks against me, shaking his head.
I'm never going to let you out of my sight.
I'm thinking that's not going to be a hardship, honey.
I've never been more scared in my life. If she wasn't already dead, I'd fucking kill her myself.
Knowing I'm the reason Jess is dead doesn't even faze me. It was either her or me, and I'm not about to feel guilty that I battled for the beautiful life I've earned. Maybe one day I'll feel differently, but I doubt it. Why am I here? He exhales, his eyes looking pained again. I hate that, but I know it's unavoidable if I want to know what happened.
When she...
He sucks in a deep breath.
When she shot you, the bullet lodged deep enough in your thigh that you lost a good bit of blood. They stitched you up, and the doctor assures me that, aside from the scar, you'll have no lasting issues. But the bump on your head is what's got you here for the night. When you passed out, you hit the edge of the toilet on your way down.
And the rest?
That's it, darling. Stitches, fluids in your IV, and monitoring you overnight. And they assure me you'll make a full recovery.
I search his eyes, feeling my brows pull in. What aren't you telling me? He searches my eyes before dropping his head and shaking it slowly.
John was part of this.
My shoulders droop, and the tension I felt in them drains away. I know.
What do you mean you know?
Jess admitted it. I look down at my lap. I know he's dead. And I know she did it, too. I'm not upset he's gone, but knowing that, in his way, he tried to stop her doesn't exactly make me feel good that he died doing so.
And him? What did he say to you?
Pulling my head back, I look into his face, confused by his question. Pardon?
I forgot about it until I stood over his body and told Sheriff Holden that John approached you yesterday afternoon.
Oh, that... I whisper, nodding. I wasn't keeping it from you, Clayton. Things were just... Well, he was the last thing on my mind when I was getting ready to marry you. I only had room for happiness, and it slipped my mind.
I'm not mad, darling. I just want to know what he had to say. Piece this shit together the best I can.
I search my mind, replaying everything I can remember. After what Jess said, some of John's confusing words make more sense. He tried to stop her, I finally say, after the silence stretches on. It didn't make any sense when he came up to me in town, but after what she said about him, I get what he'd been trying to warn me about.
Explain that to me.
I sigh and recount everything from when I was starting to cook to when Jess broke the door, and every word she had to say before what happened in the office. I know it costs him to sit here and not react. The tick in his jaw muscle and the twitching of his left eye
betray the calm he's trying to project. Once I tell him everything, I take a gulp of air and lean back, instantly exhausted.
I don't give a shit that he thought he was protecting you. He should have gone straight to the fucking cops when he realized what Jess was up to, instead of helping her with some misguided belief that he was doing it to keep you safe. There's no fucking gray line, Lenny. You could have died tonight, regardless of what he tried to do leading up to it. You could have been lost to me forever, and I'll take your life over theirs any day.
I wasn't justifying his actions. I agree with you. But even though he failed, he tried.
And failed. All that matters is that he failed.
I nod. Our ugly isn't going to touch us anymore. He closes his eyes and his nostrils flare while he composes himself.
Nothing but good's gonna touch us, darling.
I nod, resting my head against the pillow with a yawn. Clayton leans over me and presses his mouth to my forehead. I blink up at him and smile. A honeymoon might be a good idea now, I slur, exhaustion pulling me under.
Seeing that we're going to be mighty busy in the next handful of months, I think you're right.
I hear some feminine giggles, but give in to the tiredness and fall asleep, knowing that I'm safe, Clayton's safe, and there isn't anyone else out there who can hurt us. 29. Caroline. My Best Friend by Tim McGraw.
What? I screech, looking at the doctor like he's lost his mind.
I woke up 10 minutes ago when the doctor and the evil nurse who'd been torturing me all night clattered into the room pulling some equipment. Okay, so she hadn't been torturing me, but each time she came in to wake me up, it sure did feel that way. Logically, I know head injuries aren't anything to take lightly, but I'm exhausted, and sleep is the only thing I want.
Pardon?
The doctor questions, looking up from the chart in his hand. I get that I bumped my head and all, Doc, and I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, but maybe we should be checking my noggin, or better yet, yours, because nothing you just said makes sense. Clayton's manly chuckles tickle my fingers, and I glance away from the doctor to see my husband hiding his smile behind the hand he's been holding all night.
Mrs. Davis,
the doctor says, and I look over from Clayton to narrow my eyes at him.
Tracy's monitored you all night, and we have no reason to believe that further testing is needed regarding your injuries. I've given your husband your care instructions, and he knows what to look for in the event that more medical treatment is needed, which I'm confident won't be the case.
So you're just going to let me leave without making sure the head you've kept me here all night for is fine? Closing the chart, the doctor crosses his arms over his chest and smirks. I'm not sure what he thinks is so dadgum funny. At this point, I wouldn't mind knocking him over the head. When his grin grows and two dimples appear, I make a mental note to find out if he's single. He's young, clearly successful and handsome, though not as handsome as Clayton. Perfect for Lucy, even if I want to shake some sense into the crazy talking man.
We wouldn't let you leave here if there was even a slight concern, Mrs. Davis.
Well, clearly there's something wrong with my head, Doc. I'm hallucinating, hearing things or something. Either that, or I'm dreaming. Because there isn't any other reason you'd be standing there with Nurse Pokes for fun telling me I'm pregnant. I take a deep breath, my eyes widening. Oh my God, I'm losing my mind, aren't I? The fall knocked something loose, and you're about to ship me off to a home. I turn my head to look at Clayton. I don't want to go to a home. His shoulders shake as he laughs at me.
Lenny, love, no one is putting you in a home.
I narrow my eyes at him. Well, maybe we need to put him in one, then, I snap, pointing at the doctor. Maybe it'll be easier if we show you, hmm? The evil, poking-me-all-night nurse says in a sugary, sweet voice. Show me what? Your baby. She smiles, and I stare, my mouth hanging wide open. I stop arguing and, with a huff, lie back on the bed. There's no way I'm pregnant. I haven't missed my period. Aside from the whole being shot and passing out thing, I feel fine. I haven't been sick, tired, or sore. Clayton sits up straighter when the nurse holds up some long, E.T.-looking finger and starts covering it with a condom. I frown when the doctor starts moving the sheets from my legs, taking the condom finger from the nurse. My hand is squeezed at the same time the doctor starts explaining to me that he's about to insert the finger into my vagina. Whoa! I swat at his hands when he moves my gown. You can keep your kinky alien probe away from me, mister.
Mrs. Davis.
He sighs, his lips twitching as he obviously tries to keep from laughing at me. I'd like to see him be all calm and doctorly when someone wants to stick a long, skinny, condom-covered piece of plastic inside of him.
This is the most accurate way to determine how far along you are. Your numbers are high, but that could mean one of quite a few things. My guess is you're somewhere between 6 to 9 weeks along, which means this is the only form of ultrasound we can actually see the baby with.
This is such a waste of time. I haven't even missed a period. I pull the hem of my gown down, covering my naked sex. If I could reach the blanket, I'd put that back over me as well.
Some women, though few, experience their cycle throughout their pregnancies. I know this might be a surprise, but I assure you there's no way we aren't going to see a baby.
Lenny,
Clayton huskily whispers. I stop glaring at the doctor and look at my husband. His stubble has grown out even more, the black shadow highlighting his strong jaw. The lips that can drive me wild curve, a small and happy smile across his mouth. His dark-as-night hair is still a mess, but instead of seeing the raw pain that had been in his green eyes last night, all I see is a whole lot of love and even more hopefulness.
Had a little more time for this to sink in, darling, and I get you not believing the good doctor. But please, baby, let them show us what our love created.
The wind in my sails evaporates instantly, and I study my husband. The emotions written all over him infectious as a flicker of hope starts to ignite inside of me. With a nod to the doctor, I follow his instructions as he embarrassingly bears me, then inserts his ET finger into my sex. It's uncomfortable as hell, but I keep my eyes on Clayton and hold my breath. I watch his face as his eyes go wide and stay trained on the monitor. Tiny wrinkles form between his eyebrows as he concentrates. Then his hand convulses in mine, and his whole face goes soft. I've seen what my husband looks like with love shining bright, but this is something I've never seen on his face. It's as if his heart jumped from his chest to beat right behind his blazing bright eyes. Wonder, love, and pure elation beam out at me. My own heart starts to pick up speed when I realize there's only one thing that could make him look as if the world is being handed to him.
Amazing,
he says softly. I feel lightheaded as my head rolls against the pillow to look in the direction of Clayton's stare. I see the doctor's face first. He arches a brow and smiles smugly. The nurse is beaming, but I let my attention pass over her and fall on the monitor. Oh, my God! I gasp, my eyes burning as a beautiful kind of bliss slams into me. The doctor reaches out and presses some buttons. Then the quiet room fills with what can only be described as the sound of muffled hooves racing. What is that? I whisper, not looking away from the monitor, my grip on Clayton's hand tightening.
That, Mrs. Davis, is your baby's heartbeat.
Oh, I breathe.
Strong and healthy. You're measuring right at 8 weeks, and everything with the baby looks just fine.
But are you sure? Nothing is wrong after last night? The doctor shakes his head.
Not a thing. The baby is nice and protected in there, Mrs. Davis.
A baby? I shake my head, smiling so big my cheeks hurt, and blink rapidly to clear the tears, even though I know it's fruitless to try. Honey? A baby?
Heard the doc?
Clayton says, his voice thick and even deeper than normal. I look at him, seeing the same things I'm feeling in his eyes. Can you believe it?
It's our beauty, darling. Course I believe it.
We're having a baby, I cry, The image of him swimming now that my eyes are full of happy tears.
I'll print some images for y'all and get out of your hair,
the doctor mumbles. I don't pay him any attention, not when my husband is looking at me like I've just given him the greatest gift. We continue to stare at each other, ignoring the other two in the room. I don't even flinch when the doctor pulls the probe free from my body and drapes the sheets back over my legs. I hear one of them mention that the pictures are on the table next to my bed and that they'll be back shortly with my discharge papers, but I don't look away from the blazing green orbs that have me transfixed. When the door clicks, signaling their departure, Clayton pounces. My hand falls from his grip and lands on the mattress with a soft bounce, the same second his lips land on my mouth. If I thought our kisses before were magical, I was wrong. He devours me and fills me with so much love that I'm drunk on it. This is the kind of kiss you only experience with the person who holds the other part of your soul. With every swipe of his tongue, I feel like my heart is swelling. Every swirl and sweep, feeding my very being. His panting breaths against my face fill me with the all-consuming power of his love. And I give him just as much as he's giving me. The knowledge that our child, one who is wanted and loved already, is growing healthy and strong inside of me is nothing short of incredible. Our love, while it flickered to life with a brilliant bloom, grew into what we're sharing right here. Perfection.
You're going to have my baby,
he finally says in awe after pulling his lips from mine. I'm going to have your baby.
Everything, Lenny, love. Your love gives me everything.
I hiccup a sob, smiling at the man who owns my love. You're wrong, honey. Our love gives us everything.
This is it, darling. This is our forever, starting with nothing, and no one standing in the way of what kind of beautiful we create. Told you before, and I meant it then just like I do now. The ugly we had to face to get here only made us unbreakable. Having you and our child as my reward for making it through mine only makes it all the sweeter. From this moment on, we're not looking back. And I'm gonna love you so bad, you won't ever have a day without knowing your husband is everything because of you.
Oh, Clayton.
Thank you, darling, for taking that seat next to me, making that crowded bar feel empty with your shy smiles, taking a chance on us, and in the end, giving me life.
I'm openly crying now. I couldn't have held it back if I wanted to, not with him giving me so much.
I love you, darling.
He rasps, his lips pressing against my forehead. I love you too, honey. So much. Epilogue. Caroline. Holden Her by Chris Jansen. I lower the camera and smile. It's moments like these that make me want to pinch myself. Moments that fill my every day. Giving me a life that's so unbelievably beautiful, it doesn't even seem real.
Pretty sure you've got a million pictures just like that one, Lenny Love.
I scrunch my nose at my husband, turning the camera in my hands and bringing up the image I just took on the screen. I could have a million more, Clayton, and it still wouldn't be enough. He grunts out a few low chuckles.
You're a nut.
Whatever, honey. He stands, and I lean my shoulder against the doorframe to watch him. His head dips once he's on his feet, pressing a light kiss atop our daughter's head. Her tiny little rosebud mouth purses, but she doesn't wake up. His eyes close, lips still pressed against her head while he takes a moment like he always does. Never fails. He works hard all day, and the first thing he does when he comes home is strip his shirt off, wash his hands, and hold our daughter to his chest until she's asleep. Then he kisses her sweetly and breathes her in. Since before Harlow was even born, Clayton would end his day much like this, only with his mouth against my belly and our daughter kicking against his touches. My pregnancy was the kind that women dream of. I was happy, full of energy, hungry for my husband's touch, and hardly gained any weight. Of course, when you have a man like Clayton Davis showering you with his love, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell you'll feel anything other than pure bliss. Not everything has been sunshine and rainbows. In the years since the fateful night that almost stole this from us, we've continued to move forward. But it was the early days, when we both were frantic to erase the memories of that night, that put a dark cloud over the beginning of my pregnancy. The first thing he did was buy an RV. Not just any RV, either. This was the luxury of lux, grander than some homes. And after he pulled it down the drive and parked it in the grass away from the house, he told me we were moving in, temporarily, to his deluxe home on wheels. I didn't argue with him because I could see it in his eyes, the wild hunt for control driving him. So, we moved into the RV. And we lived in it for almost 4 months while Clayton put all his responsibilities on hold so he could oversee the complete renovation of our home. I didn't need to ask to understand why. I knew why he needed that. Even if it was to erase what Jess had done, I have a feeling he was also banishing the ghosts of his childhood as well. The first time I saw all the hard work he poured into our home, I cried for an hour. Not only had he gutted and updated everything, he'd turned the spare bedroom closest to ours into the most heavenly nursery I've ever seen outside of a showroom. The nursery had me crying for another hour. While our house was being renovated, he also hired someone to rebuild our gazebo. This time, he created a wraparound porch outside the structure with a freestanding hammock and an outdoor table. We've had a few dates in our spot, and not once has our time out there been anything short of perfect. All the painful memories from that night are completely eradicated. What we didn't do, though, was worry about the sequel. Not until 6 months ago, when I was entering my last month of pregnancy. I hadn't been sure that I wanted to reopen my store, but in the end, Clayton helped me see past the sadness I've been associating with rebuilding. I think a little part of me hasn't been sure I could reopen without continuously looking over my shoulder. I knew Jess and John were gone, but with so much of their evil being connected with the store, I had a hard time seeing past it. Until Clayton. Until my husband reminded me that we've got nothing but beautiful now. It didn't hurt that he reminded me while filling me with his cock and loving me slow.
"She's out,"
Clayton says softly, standing in front of me and startling me out of my thoughts. I lean to the side and look around his delicious naked torso to see the blanket-covered bundle in the middle of the dark gray crib. When I straighten and blink up at Clayton, nervous flutters start to fill my belly when his smile grows.
"You got something for me?"
he questions, smiling. "Maybe," I hedge, a nervous giggle breaking free. He tilts his head and studies me. "Come on, honey," I request, placing the camera on top of Harlow's dresser and taking his hand in mine. He follows as I pull him from our daughter's doorway and into our room. I drop his hand when we reach the middle of our room and turn to him. My eyes roam from his chiseled chest, over his defined abs, and down his denim-covered legs to his bare feet. I take a deep breath and smile at the floor before looking up at my husband. "Strip, handsome." His eyebrows shoot up, but he brings his hands to his buckle without questioning me, making quick work of shucking his pants and briefs, standing to his full height in all his naked glory. With a wink, I reach down and pull my sundress up and over my head. My breasts bounce free, reminding me that they've taken on a life of their own since having Harlow. Clayton's eyes burn as he looks down at them. He's made it no secret that he loves the changes our daughter brought to my body, especially my breasts. Anytime they're out, he's licking his lips and staring, and with a breastfeeding 4-month-old, they're out often. On the bed. Silently, he walks around me, not without reaching out and grazing my thigh with his fingertips. He climbs into our bed, right in the middle, and lies down with his arms up and hands behind his head. I climb up on the bed and shuffle my knees forward until they're pressed against his hip. He watches me intently with his emerald gaze, his erection bobbing when my eyes look down at it. When I lick my lips, he groans. As much as I'd love to sit here and drink him in, I need to feel him. Shifting, I climb over him.